Blog Talk Radio.
To health, wealth, and real estate. My name is Juwanza.
And this is Yvette. Welcome so much to our broadcast.
We are very, very excited again to have another opportunity to bring you positive, powerful, relevant information that you can use. Last I heard, buying a home was still part of the American dream.
Absolutely.
And so we want to make sure that you know how this process works. It's not just as simple as waking up one day and saying, you know what, I want to buy a house. I mean, it might start there, but that's not the end. It might start there, but then after you wake up and you say, I want to buy a house, then you need to go about finding out how the process works to buying a house.
And it's very important that you do understand that process, because there are steps to home ownership, and if you follow those steps, you'll definitely get there. We are currently in a 6-part series on the home buying process, and this is episode 3. We've already talked about personal finance, and last week we had our special guest talked about credit and the importance of credit. And today we're continuing on with the series for episode 3 on the role of the lender. And I'm so excited about our show today, because once you get to this stage right here, then that means you've done your homework. If you went back and listened to our shows, and they are archives for those of you who are listening in for the first time, then you'll know that, okay, I have to get my personal finances straight, have a budget, also the importance of credit. So now we want to talk to the lender and find out exactly what does it mean, who is the lender, what role does the lender play in this whole process. So
absolutely. And our special guest again was here. We were fortunate enough to have him. He kicked off the series talking about credit and credit reporting. And of course, again, as Yvette said, we encourage you to go back and listen to that show again, because it is full of information. And when it comes to credit reporting and the role of the lender, you might hear similar conversations, because some of it overlaps. And there may be, again, people that did not tune into that show for whatever reason. So we encourage you to call into the show today if you have questions. Yvette, for those who did not hear the show last time, can you tell a little bit about that? Could you tell them a little bit about our guest today?
Absolutely. Our special guest today is Michael K.O. He's a vice president and sales manager at George Mason Mortgage, which is located in Glen Island, Virginia. And I just want to tell you a little bit about Mike today. In 1992, he graduated from Mary Washington College with a degree in business administration with a concentration in finance. And soon after, Mike began his career in the mortgage industry. Since that time, Mike has advanced from being an assistant to the branch manager to a loan officer to currently being a vice president sales manager himself. With over the last 26 years, Michael has helped many people achieve the American dream of owning a home. He sits on the Virginia Housing Development Authority Multicultural Advisory Board and has been consistently selected VHDA top producing loan officer.
Wow.
Michael is also a qualified trainer in the VHDA Home Ownership Education Program.
Wow, that's impressive.
Absolutely. I think Mike has that experience to be able to talk about the role of the lender today.
I think so. He's tops. Did you say tops?
Top.
Wow.
Yes, that's right.
Everybody, I want you to keep that in mind as you're listening to this information. You're not talking to somebody who just got into or listening to somebody who just got into this. This is somebody that's been doing it for 26 years, knows what he's doing, and has elevated himself to the top of his field. So, again, we're very fortunate. Welcome back to the show, Mike. Great to have you back. We really appreciate you being our guest again today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for the warm introduction. And, yes, I've been doing this so long that I tell you, I've gone through up and down of the mortgage industry. You know, you remember back in 2008, the meltdown, and you know, nobody can get mortgage financing anymore because it's so difficult to get through the approval process. But since then, it has been a tremendous turnaround with the low interest rate and a more demand for more products for first-time home buyer. That, yes, it has been a tremendous amount of fluctuation with people buying for the first time. So thank you for having me here tonight, and I'm looking forward to a successful evening with everybody.
Absolutely, Mike. And, you know, we can just kind of start off the broadcast by just sharing with everyone, who is the mortgage lender or mortgage loan originator? We're not going to take for granted that people actually know who you are. So can you tell us a little bit about the mortgage lender or mortgage loan originator?
Yes. So when you need a loan for to purchase a home, it's called a mortgage. So mortgage lender can be your regular banking institution that you are dealing business with on a regular basis with checking, savings, any financial institution that offer a loan to purchase a home. That would be a mortgage lender. A mortgage originator is an individual employee that work for those company, those financial institutions that are licensed with the state and the federal government to be able to originate loan or basically issue loan to the consumers to purchase home. So that's the difference. You know, the lender, the bank, the big bank, or the big mortgage company, and the people, the originators, are the one that have the license to be able to originate loan or issue loan, not approve loan. They just originate, meaning that they take the information and submit the file for underwriting to approve to be able to lend money out to the consumer to purchase housing.
Thank you for that, Mike. And that's an important question because a lot of times people, they hear terms when they go to speak with a loan officer or they may start doing their research on the process. They may hear loan originator or loan officer or lender or you know, other terms such as that and might not know exactly what that is. And so, you know, we really appreciate that answer. So in the very beginning, you know, somebody listening to this show, or even prior to even listening to this show, thinking about buying a home, they know a few of the people, a few of the players that are going to be involved. They know they're going to need a real estate agent. They know they're going to need a loan officer, but which they don't know the order necessarily. So who would you suggest that they seek out first? Should they get a loan officer, go see the loan officer? Should they go see the realtor? Who should they see first?
Of course. Yes, you want to see the loan officer first. Just like when you go to the store to buy a pair of shoes, yes, you have a salesman that's ready to sell you that pair of shoes or the pair of boots that you want. But if you don't have the funds to pay for it, then that person is really don't know what kind of price you're willing to pay for that pair of shoes. The same exact thing as buying a house. So let's say you want to buy a $250,000 house, and instead of go see your lender, your mortgage originator, to get the financing in place, you went to see your realtor. Well, that's fine and all, but your realtor wouldn't know your buying power. You need to have that in place first. So, yes, you definitely need to go see your lender, your mortgage originator, your loan officer. Get them to take your information and make sure that you qualify for that $250,000 house you want to buy. And once you are in that position, you can go see your realtor, because now your lender can issue a pre-qualification letter and send it to your realtor, and with that, your realtor can start looking at housing that are in that price range of $250,000 or less, and whatever available in that price range, you can start looking at those houses, and we'll be able to put in an offer for the one that you like to purchase. So yes,
you want to see
your lender first.
So, you know, Mike, that's really good information, because as a real estate agent myself, I often get those type of questions when I do, especially the in-person first-time home buyer classes. And people ask that question, should I come to you first or should I go to the lender first? And whether you go to the lender or you come to the real estate agent, as you mentioned, we're going to send you to a lender if you haven't already spoken to a lender, because the real estate agent really don't know how much you can qualify for until you have actually spoken with a lender and have gotten, as you mentioned, pre-qualified or pre-approved for a particular loan amount. And then we as real estate agents can then begin to work with you and look for homes within that price range. But are all lenders the same? That's one of the things that I always also share with individuals that's thinking about purchasing a home, that that are not sure about who should I go to. So could you answer that question? Are all lenders the same? What are some questions to ask when interviewing a lender?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And the answer is, no, not all lenders are the same. There are some that don't have programs that will help first-time homebuyers. So what I mean by that is that they don't have, like, grant funds to help with down payment assistance. As you know, first-time homebuyer, not many people will have the money saved up to be able to put down a large down payment. So if your lender or the lender that is not participate in a loan product that will help first-time home buyers, they're not going to have that grant fund. They're not going to have the capability to let you borrow the money for the down payment. And if that's the case, then really you don't need that lender. You need to go see somebody that offer a product that cater towards your need. So if you are a first-time home buyer, the most important thing to ask, obviously, is that do you have products that will help first-time home lenders, such as grant funds, such as down payment assistance, where you can actually borrow it instead of have to put down out of my own pocket, things like that. You also want to ask the lender to see what kind of program they offer. Is it a fixed-rate mortgage, adjustable-rate mortgage? There's nothing wrong with adjustable rate mortgage, but my recommendation as a first-time home buyer, you want to get a fixed rate mortgage, because you want to make sure that your payment is the same on a monthly basis, especially your principal and interest payment. What that means is that you know how to budget. So let's say that your total housing payment is $1,000 a month. You want to make sure it's the same every year. Instead of $1,000 this year, and next year it's $1,500. Well, you know, I don't know if many people have that kind of raises over 1 year to be able to afford that. So obviously, you want a fixed rate mortgage. Now, if you only planning on staying in the house for less than 2 years, an adjustable rate might not be a bad thing, because you are paying a lower interest rate and you're going to sell it, or maybe you planning on taking a different job somewhere else where you have to move anyway and you're going to sell the house, then yes, an adjustable rate might not be something that you want to participate in. You also want to make sure that, you know, your term, the loan term, again, a first-time home buyer, I definitely recommend a 30-year fix instead of a 15 years or 20 years or 25 years. The reason is when you amortize it over 30 years, your payment is lower so that you can manage that payment better. Now, if you have the capability to qualify for 15 years, absolutely go for that, but I don't think many people do. I rarely do have a 15-year purchase. Now, if you refinance, if you stay in your house already 10 years already, now you want to refinance it into a 15-year because you want to cut down 5 years, five more years in interest and take advantage of the lower interest rate, yes, a 15-year will make better sense. But as a first-time home buyer purchase, 30-year is what you want to go with. And that definitely will bring your payment down lower than the 15. The longer you finance, the payment will be much lower. You can always pay towards the principal anytime you want. There is no prepayment penalties. But again, you got to make sure you ask your lender that question. Do you have a prepayment penalty on your loan? You know, nowadays, not many lenders offer that anymore. But, you know, back in before the crash of the housing crash, yes, a lender will offer prepayment, meaning that if you pay off the loan within the before the 30-year, they charge you a penalty because they are you paying off early. The company, the lender, is not making the full interest on that 30-year loan. So that might be something you want to ask your lender also. You also want to ask if they charge an application fee.
Yes.
Typically, nobody charges that anymore, but there are some will charge you. The reason is they want to make sure that you are serious about buying a house, so they want you to pay for a credit report fee that can be $50 up to $75, anything like that. But you know, you want to make sure that you trying to save as much money as you can. So select a lender that won't charge you anything upfront. It's just hard to do business with somebody already charge you upfront. You know all along they're going to start charging you until the end of the closing day, and you know it's just going to cost you tremendously higher. You can also ask about if they offer a loan with mortgage insurance or without mortgage insurance. Okay.
Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah, mortgage insurance is protecting the lenders in case of default. So let's say when you move into your house, you stay there for 2 years and you decide, no, I'm not going to make the mortgage payment anymore. So what happened with that is mortgage insurance company will pay the mortgage company back 25% of the amount that that you borrow. They're still going to go after you. It's not going to be, you know, it's not like forgiving because you have insurance on it. They're still going to after you for the remainder 75. But there are some company or some investors that willing to do without charging the mortgage insurance. Typically, they bump the interest rate up a little bit so that they roll the mortgage insurance into that. And then you can still get the tax deductible on the interest that you pay on your mortgage. So there's several ways of doing things, but yeah, that is something that you can look at because typically the mortgage insurance is add on to your payment. So if you want to buy the big house you want and you have this mortgage insurance of let's say $150 extra into your payment, then you won't qualify for the house you want. So the option is to have it with no mortgage insurance, take a little bit higher interest rate, but you can qualify for the house that you want, okay? You also want to ask for if when you lock in an interest rate, how long is it for? Is it a 30-day lock, a 45-day lock, or a 60-day lock? Is there a lock-in fee? What happens if the rate expires? Do you have to pay to be able to get the same rate, or what happened? All of that question, your lender should be able to answer for you, and you can make a determination which is best to go with. Because if every time that you ask for something and the lender charging you a fee for it, then that might not be something that will be best fit for your situation, especially as a first-time homebuyer that don't have a lot of money to work with.
Wow, this information is so powerful, Mike. Thank you for that. And for all of the listeners, again, we encourage you to call in with your questions. Please don't be shy. Just press 1 if you're listening, and we can pull you up and you can ask your question. Our special guest is Mike Kao of George Mason Mortgage, and we're going through the home buying process step by step. This is a 6-part series, and tonight we're talking about the role of the mortgage lender. Mike, I got a question for you that I think is so very, very, very important, and I'm sure that you've can speak to this. I know Yvette can speak to it as well. It is so important for a prospective buyer to be upfront and honest concerning everything as it relates to sharing information related to the home buying process or any personal financial information with their lender. Their lender is going to be like their priest, right? I mean, they need to confess everything because some things that they might not think are going to come out or might not show up on the credit report could actually show up later. How important is it for, it sounds like a rhetorical question, but it really deserves your response to it. How important is it for the client to be completely open and honest when talking with the lender?
Absolutely. It is so important. During the process of that loan, you want to be completely honest with your lender, especially your loan officer, which is the person that will be taking the loan application. So anything that you want to tell that person, keep in mind, that person is working for you. I can tell you 9 out of 10 loan officers, okay, loan originators, they 9 out of 10, they are on commission. Okay, what that means is that if your loan doesn't get an approval and go to closing, guess what? The loan officer does not get compensated for it. There's no income. All right. So if you are honest with your loan officer, he or she will be able to find ways, of course, legally within the guidelines, to be able to get your loan and approval. Okay. If you try to hide things from the lender and it can't come out towards the end of the processing stage, and now we have to go back and document, it's going to be very difficult because once an underwriter have reviewed that file, the underwriter cannot go back and say, I did not see that piece of documentation. That just ethically, that they cannot do that. So once they see it, they're either going to turn down the loan or they're going to ask for more documentation that the borrower might not be able to produce to be able to get to an approval process. So my comparison is this. It's like you're working with your attorney and you have that attorney-client privilege where you can tell your loan officer everything and it doesn't hurt you at all because that person doesn't have the authority to approve your loan or deny your loan. That person is working for you like an attorney building a case to present in front of a judge. And the judge is the underwriter. The underwriter is the person that have the authority to approve or deny your loan. Okay? So you want to work with your attorney. You want to work with your loan officer and be honest with him or her throughout the process because that person is actually going to help you get an approval. We're on the same team. We're not going against you at all. We're not going to judge you at all. If you have bankruptcy, if you're divorced, you're paying alimony, child support, judgment, whatever it is, let them know. They figured out a way to get around it. So your loan officer, your mortgage processor, your loan officer assistant, all of them work as a team to get your loan approval. So whatever they ask for, whatever that you have issues with, you want to be honest with them. Let them know upfront. We'll find a way to get the loan approved. But if you hide and we have to find out at the end, it's going to be very difficult to document and be able to get to the approval process.
So, Mike, what about situations where there have been cases where a person might have a bill or a debt and it doesn't show up on the credit report, and they assume that because it doesn't show up on the credit report that they can just play ignorant about it. Like, oh, well, although they personally know it's there, they can, you know, pretend as though I didn't see that, you know, or if it doesn't show up on the credit report, the loan officer's not going to see it, and if I don't say anything, then we'll all be good, you know, because again, that's important information to share.
No, actually, go ahead and tell your loan officer because it might not show up now, But believe it or not, right before closing, we're going to pull a soft credit report. We're going to make sure that there's no other reporting during the process of the loan. For example, let's say you buy a new construction. Typically, new construction will take 3 to 6 months to build. So during that time, all right, let's say the initial loan application, the initial credit report pull, everything's fine. But while construction is going through, the creditors, let's say you have a collection with MCV, and MCV report to the credit bureau. So now, right before closing on that new construction, the lender say we need to update the credit report just to make sure that no other surprises showed up, or the borrower had gone out and borrowed money to buy a car, and now the debt-to-income ratio is too high. I've seen that before. Buying a car, timeshare, washer and dryer, refrigerator, furniture, things like that will certainly disqualify you for buying a house, because if you finance it and you are so close with the debt-to-income ratio, now you create more debt and less income, you no longer qualify for the house that you want to purchase. So go back to that same scenario, said yes. So MCV reported, the mortgage company come back, update the credit report, and now you have a $5,000 collection from MCV. Guess what? You either have to come up with that $5,000 to pay it off, or you're going to have to do something with the loan, pay off some other debt to be able to qualify. So as soon as you find out something that will have a chance of change the outcome of the approval of your loan, you need to let your lender know immediately, okay? Especially when you're contemplating about, let's say, quitting a job, during the mortgage process, and go with a different company or go with a different employer. It doesn't matter how minute it is. Let your lender know. We need to know so we know how to deal with it. We don't like surprises, because it's very difficult to conditionally approve a loan, and then when the condition come back, oh, yeah, the person no longer working there. The person is now a Uber driver. You know, he doesn't get along with his boss.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get along with his boss, and he wants to be self-employed. So now he's going to work as an Uber driver. It doesn't work. You cannot make that kind of decision right in the middle of your loan process. So my recommendation, as soon as you find out any changes in your finances, you let your lender know so that we know how to deal with it before it gets so bad that we have to turn down the loan.
You know, Mike, that is so good, because that's why it's important to trust and feel comfortable with the decision that you've made as far as your selection concerning the loan officer that you want to work with, because it's very disappointing for a person that now you've been through, you found your home, you're under contract, you went through the home inspection. Now you're waiting for closing or the final walkthrough to close, and then something pops up, and now the lender is scrambling, trying to, might even have to put a person in a different, go another route as far as even the loan product. So that's why I definitely emphasize to my clients, if anything changes, or even before you decide on anything, changing jobs, as you mentioned, or going out purchasing something, talk to your lender. You know, the real estate agent, you're building a team. A person is building a team. You're going to have a team working for you. You're the lender, real estate agent. You're going to have a closing agent. And you're also going to go through the home inspection, and an appraiser is going to come out. So everybody that you're building on this team, they're working for you. So that's why it's important that you feel comfortable and you trust the people that's on your team. And all of our goal is to help you to get to closing. Mike, you said a little earlier you were talking about pre-qualification, pre-approval. As a real estate agent, that is very important for us, as well as for the seller, to know that our clients are pre-approved. Pre-qualification is good. Pre-approval is even better. Can you talk about the difference between a pre-qualification and a pre-approval letter?
Absolutely, Yvette. pre-qualification is a verbal estimate. So, for example, let's say Mrs. Jones call her lender and say, Mr. Lender, I make $50,000 a year. I have a credit score of 780, and I only have one bill, my car payment, which is $450 a month. So the lender say, okay, based on the information you gave me, Mrs. Jones, you can qualify for $200,000. Your payment will be such and such, and this is how much money you need at closing. So that is really a pre-qualification, because there's no evidence of pay stubs or W-2s or bank statement. The lender did not pull a credit report. There's no written verification in any way to validate the income of $50,000, to validate the car payment of $475. None of that have involved. So that will be a pre-qualification. That's not what you want. Now, that might be what you want because you are not ready to buy a house. You just want to see how much you can qualify for verbally, right? But if you are serious about buying a house, you want to get to the level of pre-approval, okay? So once you do that, Mrs. Jones, same scenario, Mrs. Jones say, this is how much I make. The lender will say, well, Mrs. Jones, this is how much you qualify for, but it's only a pre-qualification, meaning that it's just verbally estimate of how much you can qualify for. But if you want to be sure about it, I'm going to need to get your 30 days of pay stub, 2 years of tax return, 2 months of bank statement. And with that, I'm going to pull a credit report. Once I verify everything, I can actually give you a letter. It's a pre-approval that you can take to your realtor. We'll take it to Yvette, and she can start looking at houses for you, right? It's a much better status to be in. And let me tell you why. You want to be in that pre-approval status because that will help you negotiate when you find the house that you want to put in a contract. So let's say that you found that awesome house that you have been looking for, a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, nice yard in a prominent school district. Okay. Unfortunately, there were 4 different contracts asking for the same house. Right? They all want that house. Guess what? If yours is the only one that submit with a pre-approval letter from a lender, guess which one the seller is going to take over the other three?
Absolutely.
More than likely, they're going to take yours, right? Because you already have your finance ready. You have a letter from a lender saying that the borrower's money is ready. All you have to do is agree on the contract so we can order the appraisal and then get it to closing, all right? So can you imagine having that status? That will beat you over somebody else. And even let's just say that your offer might not be as high as the others, but if yours is the only one that have the pre-approval letter attached to the contract, more than likely, if I were the seller, I will heavily weight the one with the pre-approval letter, because I know that is a sure thing. The money is ready. The other three, they still have to go apply for the loan, and they don't know if they're going to get it or not. So it puts you at a different level of playing, right? So I think more than likely to me, yeah, that's great. If you talk to me, you want to see how much the payment will be and all that. But if you're not serious about buying, then, yeah, there's no need to do the pre-approval. But, yes, if you, let's say this weekend you want to go see houses, yes, you need to go ahead and send in all the stuff. Send in all of the supporting documentation so that your lender can go ahead and order that credit report, review them, do the calculation, run it through our automated system, and get that letter to you. So this weekend when you go looking for houses, you are confident. You know that you're going to get it over somebody else.
Absolutely, Mike, and that's what it's all about. You want to be prepared. We talked about that a little bit on when you covered personal finance, the importance of preparation, and that pre-approval letter is a part of that preparation. You've already spoken with a lender. Now you're pre-approved, and you're good to go. If you have the credit score, you have that pre-approval letter, you have the $2,000 out of pocket to move forward, then your agent will be ready to, if you see something that you like, you know, you can make that offer. Also, how long is that that pre-approval normally good for, Mike?
It's good for 90 days, Yvette. So
okay,
90 days. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then during that 90 days, you should be able to find a house. Now, if you happen to not find the house that you want, we just have to update the credit report because it's only good for 90 days. During that 90 days, you could have gone out and bought a car or whatever, and that would change everything. So after the 90th day, we order a new credit report. You need to send in, the borrower will need to send in 30 days of most recent pay stub and 2 months of bank statement. And then we update the system. Hopefully the credit score is still high, or the same or better. And then you save up some more money. You haven't lost your job. Everything is the same. So you can get back into that pre-approval status.
And, you know, that's really good to know because if a person is contemplating, they're looking at maybe they're in a lease agreement and they're planning when they have to give that notice. Some people ask, of course, 30-day, 60-day notice in advance. Really, because of the market that we're in, houses are going fast. So that's definitely enough time to begin to prepare, basically be ready. Speak with your loan officer, and within that process and within that time, start looking for homes. So that's really good.
Everybody, our special guest is Mike Kao of George Mason Mortgage. To the caller online, if you have a question, all you have to do is just press 1. If you're listening by phone, just call in and we can get you on so that you can ask your question and speak with our fabulous guest. You enjoying the show, Yvette?
Absolutely. Good information. And if you take notes, you should be taking notes, and definitely Mike is going to be available that you can give him a call.
Yes.
And for any additional questions that you may have, but I think I want to. Someone has a question that that I'd like to ask Mike. Someone actually emailed me this question, and I think it's a good time to ask. A person has purchased a home, and 4 months down the road, they lose that job and have no extra mortgage money saved. What is the best next step to take? I think a lot of people might be concerned right now about, is this the right time? So if you're going through this process and you're actually contemplating purchasing a home, what is the best way to prepare for unexpected things that possibly could happen?
Absolutely. I tell you, preparation is everything, and especially when you are preparing to purchase a home, it is very important that you have some kind of reserve, okay? So let's say that you know, we talked earlier about $2,000 to be able to get into the house for the earnest money deposit, the home inspection, the appraisal fee, and all of that. But during this time, you might want to prepare yourself for another 2 months of mortgage payment. Okay, so let's say that you are qualified, the lender give you the mortgage payment, it's going to be $1,500. You want to make sure that after closing, you have in your bank account at least $3,000. Just in case that you lose your job, you should be able to still stay in the house, make 2 months of mortgage payment while you searching for another job. Okay. So my recommendation is if you face that right off the bat, you have got to call your lender. All right. Don't be shy. Don't be embarrassed. And just say, you know what, I'm just going to throw the keys back into the house and I'm just going to move all my stuff out and go quietly. The lender don't want you to do that. Believe it or not, they want you to stay in that house as long as you can so that you can work out a payment plan. They don't want to take back the house. Lenders, they're more concerned with the money that they lend out. They want to get that money back. They don't want to take on a piece of real estate. Because now they're going to have to get somebody to go in there to make sure that everything is in good place. You know, let's say that the house came back over the winter. We have to winterize the house to make sure there's no bust pipe from frozen pipe or anything like that. So contact your lender the first chance that you think you're going to have a issue making your mortgage payment, okay? more than likely what they're going to do is they're going to ask for your pay stub. Okay, so let's say you were working, making $20 an hour, 40 hours a week. With what's going on now, companies slow down their production. They're cutting your hours from 40 to 20. That is going to reflect on your pay stub. And if that does happen, the lender can see, yeah, you're only making 50% of your income that you were receiving before. Your mortgage payment is not decreased by 50%. It's still the same. They're willing to work out a plan for you, either modifying your mortgage payment, add it on to the end of the term, whatever, to help you stay in your house. Okay, but do not be so ashamed and just call it quit, shut down, and move out. That's just not what we want to do. There are so many different organizations around that will help you with that also. You know, it's called foreclosure prevention, and, you know, you can call Housing Opportunity Eco. They are a huge advocate for that. Southside Housing Development, also another organization. Virginia Housing, also another good source to be able to learn about that. But yes, if you face difficulty making your mortgage payment, reach out to somebody for help. And the first person, the first call should be to your lender where you make your mortgage payment.
And I want to make this point, Mike, because having worked on the collection side myself, you know, I've seen and listened to people call in with hardships, and, you know, everything Mike just said is true. Yes, the bank does not want to take back the property. No, they, you know, don't want to see you get kicked out of your house. But although they don't want to take back the property, don't mistake it, they will. Okay, so don't think that, you know, if all you have to do, because I've heard people call up the lender and say, oh, well, I heard all I have to do is just miss about three payments, and then that'll show that I have a hardship, and that will qualify me for a forbearance or for assistance. Every situation and everybody's case is different. So please make sure that you listen to the experts in the field, because a lot of times people listen to somebody else who may have gotten assistance after going a few months late. But no, don't think that you're going to go a few months late on purpose, assuming that you're going to get assistance, because the only criteria is not that you're late. There's other things that go play into that. Right, Mike?
Absolutely. You are so on target with that, yes. Not everybody's situation are the same. If it happened to your neighbors, you know, I hear that a lot. You know, my neighbor got a 2% interest rate, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe, but you don't know if that is a 15-year interest rate or an adjustable rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your neighbor might not be giving you the truth, the whole story. Yeah, that might be true, but how many points do they have to buy down to get the 2% interest rate? Everything is possible, but is it possible for you? Okay, so yes, I want a 2% interest rate. But if I don't have the money to buy down to get that interest rate, or the income to qualify for a 15-year loan, then the interest rate, that 2% interest rate, is no good to me. I should be looking at whatever is fit in my financial picture, my situation with credit score, my situation with debt-to-income ratio, to be able to get an approval. So, you know, yes, very important that, yeah, do not try to deliberately miss three house payments to qualify for forbearance or deferment or any of those, because it's not worth it. It's going to show up on your credit report, and when you miss a mortgage payment, your credit score decreases significantly, and you will not be able to get other financing, student loan for your kids to go to school, or get a credit card, or a car loan, or just a personal loan to be able to go on vacation, whatever the situation is. With a low credit score because you missed a mortgage payment, it's going to ruin your credit, okay? And again, the most important thing is your lender is going to ask for your pay stubs, okay? So if you don't provide it, they have the right to send verification directly to your employer. And nowadays, mm-hmm. many company, if you work for a big company, they all belong to a network to get verification without have to be bother them directly. So yes, if your pay stub is reflecting that there's no decrease in your income and your ability to make that mortgage payment is the same, and you deliberately missing your mortgage payment, there is no forbearance. There is nothing except you now have a black mark on your credit report that decreased your credit score, and your chance of borrowing money is going to be slim to none going forward. So yes, highly recommend don't listen to anybody except your lender that servicing your loan, the one that taking your payment on a monthly basis, to be able to give you good sound advice going forward.
Well, hopefully everyone that's listening today, you will not face this financial crisis, but it's just preparation and just being prepared and having that emergency fund or that little nest egg. I know we talked about the $2,000, but it's always good to have a little bit more saved. Mike, you said you also mentioned about the credit score, and now that we're in the COVID crisis right now, what is the minimum credit score needed to qualify for a mortgage loan today, and what is a FICO score? These are some of the terms: FICO score, Vantage score. Things are a little different right now because of what's going on in the market. So can you tell us a little bit about what's that minimum credit score needed to qualify for a mortgage today?
Yes. The credit score, different loan program have different credit score requirement. So, for example, with Virginia Housing, the minimum middle score, and keep in mind, I'm going to refer to it as the middle credit score, because when we pull credit report, we're going to pull from all three different credit bureaus: TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. And then we use the middle score up to three. So let's say one come in at 680, one come in at 660, and one come in at 580. Okay? So the 660 will be the middle one. It does not matter if it's from Experian or TransUnion or whatever. You know, it's just we use the middle of the three. Okay? So now, why are they different? Why are they all the scores are different? The scores are different because they are all from three different credit bureaus throughout the country, the U.S., okay? So typically, if you live in the West Coast, they report, the creditors will report to TransUnion, okay? If you live in the East Coast, the creditor report to Equifax, and Experian is the middle of the country. So let's say we have an individual that moved here from California and now buying a house here. Well, that individual had established a lot of credit score or credit with TransUnion. More than likely, that score will be higher or lower, depends on the percentage of users or if there's any derogatory reported with those creditors. Okay, so that's why they are different. And so for us to say, well, we're going to use the lowest one. Well, that's not fair, right? That's not fair. We need to use the middle one to make it more balanced from all three bureaus. Okay. So, yes. So that was for Virginia Housing, 620 middle score. For Federal Housing Administration, FHA loan, 640. Investors are now asking for a 640 middle score to make sure that the loan that they are buying or they issuing, the probability of default will be less, okay? And then we have conventional financing. Typically, those are for private investors. They just pull money together and lend it out under a mortgage loan, and that particular credit score will be 680. So what would be a good program for people for first-time home buyer to go with? More than likely, it will be Virginia Housing, because first-time home buyer, you don't know any better. You might have not taken care of your credit in the past, So your credit score is lower. So VHDA understand that, or Virginia Housing understand that. So they design programs that will cater towards the lower score range. Okay. So let's say you live there for a couple years and now you want to buy a bigger house. And by then you have paying on time on your mortgage and other creditors. Your credit score is now 680, and when you sell your house, you do have a little bit of money to be able to put down for a bigger house. Then you might want to go with a conventional loan instead of an FHA loan. It really depends on your situation at that time. Okay, the credit score, there's several different models. The Advantage model or the FICO model. With mortgage lending, we use the FICO because it's a little bit more conservative. So you're going to see that. I hear this a lot. I mean, my Credit Karma is saying that I have a 780 credit score, but when the lender pull it, it's going to be like a 720 or a 740. Why is that? Well, they use two different models. Credit Karma is for information for you to look at. They don't lend any money at all. They just give you the information, hopefully that you can use that to better your credit. You know, they will show you any kind of collection judgment or whatever, so you can be able to fix it. And then when you go to your lender, you can get financing, you can get qualified. So I would say, rule of thumb, if your Credit Karma is showing a 780, your real score might be 740 or 730. Okay, so about 30, 40, maybe sometimes 50 points lower than what is reporting there. So.
Wow.
Okay.
That's interesting. That's a big jump.
And that's what a lot of people gauge our scores by. That's why I always encourage people, you need to speak with a lender to get that score from the lender. Now, Mike, as far as a person who filed bankruptcy, I think we talked about that in the past, that it doesn't make you ineligible to be able to get a mortgage loan if you filed bankruptcy. But what is the requirements a little different as far as the credit score is concerned for a bank if you filed the bankruptcy?
Actually, the credit score is still the same. It's just there are two types of bankruptcy. So if you file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and Chapter 7 is the chapter that you don't have to pay back at all. You don't have to pay the creditor back anything at all. Okay. So if you have gone with that program, then there is a 2 years waiting period after the discharge date. So let's say you file in January of 2020. And it takes 3 months to discharge, meaning that it takes that time for all of the creditors to agree to forgive you from making payment. And now the court say you are now discharged of all creditors of making payment in March of 2020. Then March of 2022 is when you can get financing under FHA. Okay. Now, the other program is a Chapter 13. Chapter 13 is a restructuring of your debt, and that's where you actually have to pay back all of your creditors. It might be a smaller amount instead of the amount that the creditor is asking, because it's now protected by the bankruptcy court. Your attorney negotiated, the judge already agreed on a certain amount to make sure that you can qualify based on your income and you know, still have money left over to live on. And so let's say that is a five-year plan to pay back all of your creditors. Under that program, if you make your payment back to your creditors on time for 12 months with the approval of the trustee or the court, you can actually purchase while you're in bankruptcy. You can actually get mortgage financing while you're in bankruptcy. Okay, you don't have to wait until discharge to qualify, only for Chapter 13. Chapter 7, it doesn't work like that. It's 2 years after discharge date. Okay.
I can imagine that it's a little stricter guidelines, though, as far as no late payments and different things like that.
Absolutely, yes, especially with a Chapter 7, because the system is treating that as a one-time forgiving. You know, it's wiping everything clean off of your credit. It's basically resetting and saying, going forward, you shouldn't have any more late payment. You shouldn't have any more collection because we wipe out everything. You are forgiving from paying everybody back. So, yes, the mortgage company do look at a Chapter 7 a little bit more strict because it's a forgiving debt and giving you a fresh start. So going forward, you should not have any late payment collection judgment.
All right.
Everybody, our special guest again is Michael Kao of George Mason Mortgage. I guess we could call him the expert of experts. Okay, so when you're looking for someone to talk to, you need to make sure you're talking to the experts, and Mike is tops in his field. So, again, we encourage you, and we'll tell you all about how you can get in contact with him. His contact information is in the description page, and we'll also have him share his contact information with you himself. Mike, what's the difference between a hard pull and a soft pull? People may have probably heard those terms, or even if they haven't heard them, they might be Christmas shopping or something, and somebody says, hey, we got a special, you know, all you got to do is just let us run your credit or whatever. People need to know the effect of things like that. So could you explain what is a hard pull and a soft pull, and also after a person's been pre-approved, how many times will the lender pull their credit? You mentioned earlier that prior to closing that they're going to pull it again. Any other times in that process?
Sure. So the hard pull is when your mortgage company, typically a hard pull really come from your mortgage company, okay? A lot of credit card company, they might just pull a soft one, meaning that they pull from one bureau, okay? So they might pull from TransUnion or Equifax or Experian, but they don't pull from all three. Mortgage company, we want to make sure that we are not missing any credit out there that report to one agency and not the other. So when we pull it, it's going to be a hard hit, okay? And when I do the pre-qualification or pre-approval, I pull from all three. So that way I'm not missing anything, because once I put my name on something, especially a pre-approval letter, it's going to be good as gold unless there are changes that I have not been notified. So again, going back to being honest with your lender, right? So if you know up front that you're going to lose your job within the next 3 months, and it took you 4 months to buy a house, and now the contract come back and we go to verify you don't have a job, then yes, that pre-approval letter is no good. But the condition had changed without my knowledge. So, you know, again, go back to the honesty. You got to be honest with your lender. So yes, when do we pull it again? Only if, you know, if the pre-approval status expired and you have not found a property, then yes, we will pull the credit report again to make sure everything is the same going forward. If you have found a property and the loan is getting set for ready to close, that's when we pull another one. But it's not a hard hit at that time. It really is a inquiry to make sure we look at your file to see how many inquiries are in there. Inquiries are when you go and apply for credits and they look into your credit report to look to see if you are credit worthiness to extend credit. That's called an inquiry. So, for example, I get this a lot. You know, when I go to Target, I'll go in there to buy whatever, and the cashier will say, you know, you can save 10% if you open a Target card.
Right.
Well, I'm buying a pair of socks. I mean, it's like $5. I mean, 10% doesn't do me any good, really, on a $5 a pair of socks. So, and not only that, there will be a hit against my credit because there is an inquiry in there. So who does that a lot? When you go shopping for a car, guess what the car dealership do? They take your information and they shop around to make sure that they get somebody that will do a loan for you to meet your demand. Let's say that you want a $30,000 car, but you only want a $200 a month payment. They're going to mm-hmm. find that lender for you, even though if the loan is 15 years, they're going to find it for you. I'm kidding. I mean, nobody would do a car loan for 15 years. But, I mean, you know, so when they do that, you get all of this finance company hitting your credit, trying to see how good your credit is, the extent lending, extent credit. That's when your credit score will go down tremendously, okay? So inquiry is very important. I mean, if you don't need to get a credit card, don't get one. Because if you get one, it's gonna show on there as an inquiry. And if you get that credit card for a $300 limit, because you just, you know, Haynes Furniture is famous for that. So they give
right.
you a credit line, and they want you to max it out right away. Because, you know, obviously the more you buy, the more commission the salesperson will get. So once you max it out, your credit score go down. You open a new account, you max it out. That is a combination for a decrease in your credit score. Okay.
So
I'm rambling on, and I forgot.
Company and ask them to increase their limit because, you know, they've been good. Let's say they had that $300 limit, and it's getting close to the holidays, and they want to see if they can raise it up to five. If the lender, or shall I say the credit card company, does, in fact, increase their limit because they called and asked, as opposed to them just increasing it without the person actually requesting it, does that make a difference?
Not at all. Not at all. Because the system doesn't know. They don't know in the credit report that consumer asked for increase or a creditor increase automatically. So that's no problem at all. As a matter of fact, that is one of the tools that you can use to increase your credit score. By, let's say, for example, let's say you have a Capital One account and the limit is $500 and the balance is $499. You are maxing out, right? You are maxing out, but you have had that account for 1 year. You have always made on-time payment on that account for the last 12 months. Guess what? You can actually contact Capital One and say, you know, you can see the history there. I've been making payment on time. I need to extend that to $1,000 or $1,500. Now, when you do that, you make yourself available a bigger room to charge up, but I don't recommend for you to go out and max it out because now your ratio from high credit limit to your balance is lower. That is when your credit score will start accumulating and you get more credit score that way. Okay, so typically I recommend that you pay down if you have a 500 balance, you pay it down to 30% of the credit limit, and that way the credit score will go up. But in a situation where you don't have a lot of cash to work with, making that payment is not an option. But if you have a history of making payment on time, you can always ask the creditors to increase the credit limit so that way your score can go up that, you know, during that time. It's just the trick is don't – if they increase it and you go out and max it out again, then it's defeating the purpose of getting – achieving higher credit score.
All right. Thank you. So, Mike, can you believe it is already – an hour has already passed.
We're having
you
too
know,
much
we,
fun. That's what it is.
Great, great information, and thank you so much for sharing all of this valuable information. We do have a couple of more questions. You got time for a couple of more questions, Mike?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. So we definitely want to talk about down payment and closing costs because we talked. You mentioned a little bit about the down payment assistance and grants and different things like that, but there are a variety of sources that a person can use for down payment, but you have to have a down payment and closing costs. So can you talk about the down payment, what is a down payment, and acceptable sources for obtaining down payment, and what are closing costs?
Absolutely. So down payment is money that you put down to reduce your loan amount so that way you have a lower payment. So, for example, if you buy in a house $200,000 and you have $10,000 to put down towards the down payment, So 200,000, you put down 10,000. Now your loan amount is 190,000. That 10,000 is called a down payment. Okay. So instead of having a $200,000 loan amount, you have 190,000 because you put down some money. It's the exact same thing as buying a car. You know, if you buy a $30,000 car and you say, I want to put down $5,000 as a down payment because I only want to borrow $25,000, okay, that will be your down payment towards the purchase of your car. Same thing with a house. You put down towards the purchase of your home. Closing costs, on the other hand, are fees, costs that involve with purchasing your house, okay? Just like a car, there is processing fee, there is tax, title, all of that. Same exact thing with your house. There is appraisal fee, credit report, attorney fees, title search, recording fees, sometimes there's a survey. All of those costs consider closing costs, okay? The fees that get involved when you purchase a house. So typically, the closing cost is the negotiable fee with the seller. It depends on how motivated they are. So let's say that you're purchasing this house and the property has been on the market for a year, okay? More than likely, the seller will willing to pay for the closing cost to help you with the cash at closing. If the house has only been on the market for 2 days, typically they're not going to negotiate. They're going to wait for a better contract to come along to be able to accept it or not. So that's what the difference between two. Now, the seller can pay for closing costs, but they cannot pay for down payment. Okay, down payment will have to either come from your own pocket. You can get that as a gift, or you can get it from a nonprofit organization in the form of grant funds. So I work closely with, again, Housing Opportunity May Equal. All of their grant funds have income limit. If you qualify, they will determine how much you get. It's either $5,000, $7,500, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. They have several different layers of grant that they can get their hand on. Same thing with Southside Community Housing. And I can actually combine the two of them together. So let's say you get $10,000 from home and $5,000 from Southside. Now you have $15,000 to put down towards your down payment and or closing costs if the seller doesn't pay closing costs. Either way, you know. But those are the down payment and closing costs that involve in a transaction, a purchase transaction.
Wow, this has been one powerful educational show, Mike. I know there are going to be a lot of people that hear this and want to get in contact with you. Do you service loans in Maryland as well?
Yes, we do. Yes, we would do a loan in Maryland, Washington, D.C., Virginia, West Virginia, Tennessee, all the way down to North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida.
Okay. You got the Eastern Seaboard kind of on lock. Like, we definitely want you to please share your contact information with people because, again, everybody you've been listening to, the expert of experts, okay? Mike is tops in his field. He's great at what he does. And Yvette can testify to that. She's worked with Mike. And
absolutely.
You know.
And that's why it's important to, again, as we started the broadcast and was saying, is the choosing the right lender, someone that is knowledgeable about these special programs and grants, and to help assist, especially first-time home buyers, because they need that help with the down payment oftentimes, and then also being able to negotiate that closing cost. So Mike is the person.
Mike the mortgage man. Mike, please
you.
Share your information.
You
How can people
much.
Get in contact with you?
Yes, absolutely. So you mentioned earlier my office is over in Innsbruck. My office number is area code 804-521-0949, 804-521-0949. My cell phone is 804-301-8415, 804-301-8415. email, the best way to get in touch with me is my first initial, M for Michael, and then last name spelling C-A-O, C as in cat, A as in apple, O as in Oscar, at GMM, stand for George Mason Mortgage, LLC.com. Okay. Yeah, I'll be happy to, if you have a situation where you want to discuss on a personal basis, call, email, and I can go over that. Again, not everybody have the same situation when come to mortgage financing. So you need to be able to get the sound advice to get you to loan approval. And that's what I do, and I'll send it right back to Yvette, which she is a fantastic realtor that can negotiate closing costs and point you to the right direction to be able to get that contract, to get that house that you want. We work together as a team. And again, I mean, that doesn't mean that there's no kickback or anything like that. We don't do that. That, first of all, is against the law. And second of all, you want to have good people working on your team to achieve the same goal. So thank you both for having me today on your show. And I'm hoping
you
to get invited again. And I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, we're gonna we're working on putting together a show specifically on maybe down payment and different sources of funding as far as the grants. Kind of getting more down and detailed information concerning those additional programs. We can't cover everything in one show in an hour, so definitely you will be hearing from us, Mike.
I know everybody, you
Thank
would
you.
Love. Keep talking, and we could go on and on and on and on and on, but I guess we gotta let them go.
Well, have
we
a fantastic
you again,
evening.
Yes. Yeah. It's been fabulous. I mean, great, great information. We tell people to get their information from the experts, from those people that know. And so, again, we're very fortunate enough that you've taken time out of your busy day to spend it with us. So we thank you so much, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, that is Michael Kale of George Mason Mortgage. Let me give you his contact information again. If you'd like to get in contact with him, here's his office number. It's 804. He's with George Mason Mortgage. The office number there is 804-521-0949. Again, that's 804-521-0949. Again, his name is Michael Kao, and that's spelled C-A-O, last name, like cat, apple, orange. His cell number is 804-301-8415. Again, cell number, 804-301-8415. So, wow, powerful, powerful
Absolutely.
Information.
Absolutely. And when you get to this place where you're now ready to get that mortgage financing,
mm-hmm.
you definitely need to take that step. You know, sometimes people get to they work on the personal finance and then they work on the credit, but then they're a little leery about when is the right time to get with the lender.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to know where you are in the process. And even though that might be a little hard pull in the beginning, but you have to get it in a way, I always tell people. So
mm-hmm.
why not sit down with a lender, sit down with Mike, give him a call, and then he can kind of let you know where you are, you know, how much you can afford, and then you can plan from that point on. But that definitely, we are moving right along, and this was our third show, and we have another one. Next week is our fourth episode, and I'm so excited because now it's going to be my time to share on the role of the real estate agent, and I'm so excited about that because once you get to that place that you're ready, then it's just a matter of knowing what is the steps, what is my role as a real estate agent, how can I service my client and help you to find that home that you're looking for, and that's so exciting to me.
You know what? I am so excited for you as well, and I'm sitting up here grinning from ear to ear because I know how passionate you are about helping people and how passionate you are about real estate and helping people to achieve their dream of home ownership and the fulfillment that I see that you get when you see other people, when you hand them the keys.
Absolutely.
And they realize, and you're standing there, and you're taking pictures, you know,
yes.
of people standing there happy and faces beaming because they did it. They went from pre-approval to closing.
Absolutely.
And it's a beautiful feeling to have, to see, to, you know, have to, you know, deal with the everything you have to deal with involved in it, to walk them through, hold their hand, take them through to make sure that they get from A to Z.
And you know what? And it's, and once you're prepared, it's just a matter of 30 to 45 days sometimes when you can actually have those keys in your hand after you find that property. So that's why I like to do these. That's why we're doing these shows, to prepare people for the steps so that the process can be as smooth and easy as possible. So next Monday, please remember to tune in at 6 o'clock. That will be Monday, June 22nd, and I'll cover. And we'll be talking about the role of the real estate agent. And we're also planning other shows after this six series broadcast. So also follow us on Blog Talk so that you can be alerted and reminded concerning these upcoming shows.
You know, the beautiful thing I think about these shows is that it doesn't matter where you live to be able to take advantage of this information. You know, Mike mentioned the area that his company services, but somebody might be listening in California. Somebody might be listening in Texas or Ohio or someplace where or, you know, wherever, where this information, you know, where they might not be able to deal with Mike directly from the standpoint of him being able to be the loan officer for them, but the information is still the same. Okay, you might be in California, but there's still lending guidelines. You still need
Absolutely.
To know the process. You may be in Ohio, but you still need to know the process. And for young people, if young adults can get this information early, you know, because a lot of times people just coming out of college or whatever, they're not thinking about buying a home in most cases. You know, oftentimes they might be thinking about getting their first job. You know, they're thinking about their career. But what about home ownership? If you can buy a home early
mm-hmm.
in your life as a young adult, and of course, and I just maybe we can talk about this a little bit next week, knowing that your first home may not be your dream home, okay? It might be two or three homes before you get to your dream home, but if you start the process early, who knows where that will take you? You could possibly get into investing or a lot
Absolutely.
Of different avenues.
Well, real estate, purchasing real estate is definitely a secure investment, a solid investment, and you can use it to as stepping stones to create wealth,
mm-hmm.
to be able to leave an inheritance. We talked about that, a legacy, you know, and it's not just about the purchasing of the home, it's the actual process of even getting there, as we mentioned, personal finance and establishing your credit score and taking control of your finances and of being able to manage your finances properly. You'll be able to do many things. So that's why it's about health, wealth, and real estate. And that's why we're bringing these shows. And right now we're talking about the home buying process. And definitely we're going to have other shows that's going to be available to just continue to educate you on just different avenues that's available to help create wealth in your life.
Well, everybody, we encourage you again to call Mike Kao at George Mason Mortgage. He's he's tops in his field. I mean, when you can get an opportunity to get information from somebody that's tops in what they do, number one, in what they do amongst their peers of very, very qualified people, and that out of those very, very qualified people, that the person that you got information from today was number one, okay, in this region, then you can count on that information, okay? And it's so important to get the information from the people that know, because we are famous for getting information from somebody else who we may have known have bought a property, or somebody else we may have known got information about whatever topic we're interested in. But everybody's situation is different. You know, there are certain situations that just might not apply to you based upon certain factors that you might not know about. So that's why it's important to speak with the experts. So, again, if you want to get in contact with Mike Kao, his cell number is 804-521-0949. I'm sorry, that was his office number, 804-521-0949. His cell number is 804-301-8449. And again, next week, have everybody you know tuned in, because you're going to be having an opportunity to listen to another person who's tops in her field, my darling wife, Yvette, who is going to be talking about the role of the real estate agent. That is a very central role. And it's when people think of real estate agents, they often think about, oh, just somebody going around showing houses. It is so much more than that. In many cases, you have to hold the whole deal together.
Absolutely, and as we mentioned earlier, sometimes, you know, you're wondering, should I go to the lender? Should I go to the real estate agent first? But if you come to me, I'm definitely will help to keep and put everything together and help guide you through the process because, you know, a lot of times first-time home buyers are a little nervous about the process, and so definitely, you know, that's something that you want to feel comfortable with whoever you work with, that they are going to help educate you through the process. And actually, sometimes people feel comfortable with holding, if you can hold our hand through the process.
And even, again, if you're in California, Texas, Ohio, Boston, wherever you are, and you're not in an area that you would actually be serviced by either Mike K.O. or Yvette or any of our other guests, the information is the same wherever you are. So please share this information. If you're in Ohio, share this information with people that you know can benefit from this information. Wherever you are, if you're in Texas, if you're in wherever, just share this information with other people that you know so that they too can get the benefit that you just got from listening to Michael Cam. Like anything you'd like to say, Yvette?
Well, if you have any questions, if you want to send us an email, you can email us at hwrblogtalkradio@yahoo.com. That's hwrblogtalkradio@yahoo.com, or text us at 804-647-5868. That's 804-647-5868. With any additional questions that you may have, or if you want me to get in contact with you concerning anything, I would be happy to speak with you. But, again, I look forward to next week.
Me too.
And we're going to keep on sharing this information. Thank you again for tuning in.
We really appreciate you. We don't take it for granted that you could not be doing something else. Again, please share this information with other people that you know. We've got the role of the real estate agent coming up. We're going to have
the
home inspection. Somebody's going to be on talking about the home inspection. The role of the closing attorney. You don't need to miss any of this because it's all important so that when you go through that process, you will have a reference point. You'll be able to say, you know, I remember that from the show, okay? So we definitely encourage you to do that. And, again, we thank you so much for your time. Everybody, we'll see you next week, 6 o'clock, same time, same station. My name's Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Peace.
Peace.